Now we take a look at why Milwaukee is getting national attention for its success in cutting crime.
Criminal justice and race relations are in the headlines today in the wake of a grand jury decision in Ferguson, Missouri, not to indict Officer Darren Wilson, who shot and killed 18-year-old Michael Brown this past August.
Milwaukee has had its fair share of distrust between the black community and the police force. Just this past April, a white Milwaukee police officer fired 14 rounds and killed Dontre Hamilton, a mentally ill, unarmed black man. Protests ensued, and the police chief dismissed the officer for not following protocol.
While the force may face challenges, it's also being recognized for growing relationships with the community and using a data-driven approach to help prevent crime rather than just respond to it. Today, Milwaukee has the lowest homicide rate of any big city with high poverty rates in the country, faring much better than cities like Detroit, Baltimore, Newark, and Cleveland.
Politico magazine recently featured Milwaukee's police force in its What Works series, which focuses on innovative ideas that are helping to reinvent urban areas. Eric Gunn, a Milwaukee-based journalist who wrote the piece How Milwaukee Went Soft on Crime, joins us now. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start off with a premise that may surprise people around the state that might think of Milwaukee as a high crime area. Crime rates have been getting better over the last couple of decades?
They have, and they have continued to do so even in the face of the fact that Milwaukee is certainly continues to struggle economically. And to the degree that the economics and economic disparities are a part of what contributes to higher crime, they're kind of going against the grain, if you will.
So what kind of things happen to go against the grain? What are people chalking these positive results up to?
Well, there are, I think, several different things at work here. But a big one is the role of the police officer in interacting with the community in which she or he is are stationed. The closely related to that were some changes that Edward Flynn, chief since 2008, made upon becoming chief here, namely downsizing the number of plainclothes people who were attached to the detective bureau and putting some of those folks back in the local individual neighborhood stations so that they also become part of this effort to be closer to the community and spend some energy in crime prevention as well as detection of and solving of crimes.
Let's follow up on this community policing concept. How does that play out in what an officer, plainclothes or uniformed, might do out on the streets on a shift?
Well, a lot of it plays out in bigger events in terms of how the department as an institution interacts with the neighborhood. There are meetings in every district every month, community meetings that really acquaint people much more with the department leaders in that district. But then when it comes down to the individual, there is a greater effort to know and understand the individuals in the community in a way that was not as emphasized in the past, in terms of who the players are, good and bad, in terms of listening to what they have to say, in terms of being responsive when people have a complaint about a problem in a particular area, whether, you know, it might be a rash of burglaries or even less apparently serious events such as vandalism. All of that is part of this, but it's probably not quite enough to explain it all. There's other aspects to what has been done, and it's not so much sort of one silver bullet as a fundamental rethinking of how police work is done and what actually constitutes police work.
And I want to get into that and some of the data-driven items you mentioned. But before we move on from the community relation building between police and communities. Obviously, a huge topic given what's going on in Ferguson, distrust between minority communities on one hand, police on the other. How is Milwaukee doing when we look at national comparisons and we look at Milwaukee's own past?
Well, certainly Milwaukee has some very difficult things in the past to overcome. You could go back to the 1950s when there was a notorious killing of an African American civilian and a concerted cover up that only came to light much later. And when I arrived in Milwaukee in the mid-80s, it was the subject of a play, interestingly enough. It's kind of a documentary play. So you've got that. You've got the something like 20-year tenure of Chief Harold Breyer, very tough law and order guy, and infamous for some racist comments that he made at various times in his tenure as chief. And then even since that time, there have been a series of incidents that have, again, pointed to the work that still needs to be done in terms of building better bridges between the department and the community, especially the African-American community. You had the severe beating of a biracial man in 2004 at a police by off-duty police at a party. You had the Frank Jude case. You had the death a few years ago of a man in custody who died basically following an asthma attack and who was not initially believed to be having a health problem when he was complaining that he couldn't breathe. And then you have the case of Dontre Hamilton that you mentioned back in April. So all of those things have certainly raised and continue to raise questions. The interesting thing is about all of that, quite bluntly, there has not been the degree of intense protest. I'm not saying there has not been protests, and I'm not saying that there have not been, sincere protests, but there's not been the kind of overwhelming scale of protest in Milwaukee that you saw, for instance, in Ferguson, Missouri. There are different interpretations of that. People who are much more skeptical of the police today say, well, maybe it's just that people in Milwaukee feel so beaten down. But I will tell you that Tom Barrett, the mayor, and Chief Flynn as well, said to me in various ways that maybe there isn't quite that depth of mistrust because of some of the success in very subtle ways that the department has had in making inroads into its connections with the community.
We're speaking with Eric Gunn, Milwaukee-based reporter and contributor to Politico magazine, about Milwaukee's data-driven approach to fighting crime.
Politico magazine has pointed to Milwaukee's approach as a guide for other cities that are looking to prevent crime rather than just respond to it. And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think the Milwaukee Police Force is doing a good job of forging relationships with the community? Do you approve of Police Chief Edward Flynn's work in the city? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're back with Eric Gunn, Milwaukee-based reporter and contributor to Politico magazine, talking about Milwaukee's data-driven approach to fighting crime.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed a change in Milwaukee's policing tactics over the last two decades? Is it a change for the better? Do you think it's the police force's responsibility to do the kind of community-building relationship management we were talking about? Call 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Eric, we hit a lot of the community relationship building. A big part of your piece is on a kind of a data-driven approach to policing. What kind of forms has that taken?
Yeah, what that does is a much more intense awareness and particularly much closer to real-time awareness of what's happening and where it's happening, so that a pattern, for instance, of burglaries in a particular area will become much clearer, much faster. There's also data sharing across the different districts in a way that has not been possible in the past, thanks to computer technology and so on, but also because it was made a priority when Ed Flynn became chief. So that, for instance, if a person who might be, let's say, a bad actor has surfaced on people's radar screen in connection with one particular series of crimes in one district, and then that there's a similar method of crime, it's a burglary where everybody's, being broken into in quite the same way or at quite the same time of day or something like that, then that information spreads from one district to another much more quickly. There's also a weekly meeting. It's called CompStat, which was a term that originated in New York City. Basically, computerized statistics is what that relates to. And they look at individual districts and drill down to such things as, how many times are officers interacting with members of the community. Now, it is not so much emphasizing arrests and tickets written, although it sometimes gets portrayed that way by some who are skeptical of it, but more just direct contact with the community, which is another way that you get that sense of who is in your neighborhood and that we talked about before. So those are some of the ways that they're using data, and it seems to be helpful in letting them make decisions about where to deploy people. For instance, if there's a rash of burglaries, there can be some disciplined look at where do you think they might be going next, and so on, to stake out potential upcoming targets. That seems to be working and helping to be part of that big reduction in crime that you mentioned at the top of the show.
Let's get to a caller. We've got Robert on the line in Green Bay. Robert, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I am a former auxiliary police officer with the Milwaukee Police Department. I am also a former state licensed guard, and I work hand-in-hand with the police department on many occasions. I have seen some terribly corrupt things that have happened within the police department, even going as far as the police department when they would arrest somebody for drug possession or do a raid, how they would turn in only some of the evidence, and some of the evidence went to drug houses that they know of, and they would even protect these drug houses and profit from them. They know of known gang activity. The city is just incredibly corrupt all the way around.
Gotcha, Robert. Not much time left, but Erica, is there an effort to change either the reality or the perception of that kind of corruption in the police force?
There certainly is an effort to change both. I think that, I certainly can't speak to the kind of crimes that our caller talked about, and I would certainly urge the individual, if he knows the specifics and names and places, that there are authorities who would be interested in hearing about that and would want to investigate. But I will say that one example may be the recent, and it was not, in a sense, in some ways, a good day for the police department, but in other ways it was. The recent filing of charges against several police officers who were accused of engaging in body cavity searches without proper warrants, without proper authority, of suspected drug criminals. And those have led to, there was certainly some outrage about that as that news came out, and they have also led to criminal charges. I think Chief Flynn has been pretty serious about trying to change the code of conduct, and not just the code of conduct, but the actual living up to the code of conduct. I also would note that that he's tried to draw a line between honest mistakes and true bad action. And I think that's sometimes led him not to pursue as harshly some situations that others might have wanted to see him. People are still, it took a long time to fire the officer involved in the Dontre Hamilton shooting.
Leave it there. Eric Gunn, thanks for joining us. That was Milwaukee-based journalist Eric Gunn. His recent piece, How Milwaukee Went Soft on Crime, appeared in Politico Magazine's most recent installment of What Works, a look at innovative ideas that are reinventing cities.